Good morning on this May 21st, 2018. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. I'm Cecil Prescott.
I think I'm Celeste Carey. I'm not quite sure.
I hope you are.
You know, some quotient thereof, some ratio thereof.
Oh, great. And you're listening on 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany, and KBOO.FM over the World Wide Web. And we greet you this Monday morning as we head towards the end of May, as we approach the summer months. And
already?
And already. It's happening already. Get ready.
It has been a speedy advance, I guess I'll say. I'm not sure. I almost said ascent, but I can't necessarily qualify it as an ascent. I don't know that we have, yes.
Oh, right.
I don't know the word.
Out.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. After listening to Democracy Now, it feels like maybe we might be on a nosedive, so to speak.
Certainly, it's, well, yeah, I agree with you. We're certainly not rising, if that's the proper word to use, to where we ought to be. The news on Democracy Now! Reveals the state of who we are, regardless of what we pretend to be. And, you know, the unending, continuing story of mass shootings and the inability to address the issues in any meaningful way.
I don't want to say inability. I don't believe we are unable. We are unwilling to let go of something that we think keeps us safe. Mm-hmm. And I'm using we deliberately, because it's not just the mindset of the people who hold tight to the guns that are making it so. There's something on either side all the time about people and their fears that we hold on to keep us from making progress. So, you know, they get by, and they being those who are gun proponents, get by on saying it's them this time just because it'll be us next time.
Yeah, that is the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, coincidentally, it's the 20th anniversary of a mass shooting in Oregon, at Thurston High School. So, but it's an unending story, and I'm sure, I know we'll have another story in the news about another shooting, mass shooting.
Well,
tomorrow, today, next week, Kit.
Well, let's be prepared to do something more than just awful words.
Oh, yeah, prayers. How does it go? Thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
Okay, thoughts and prayers. Although I did see the, you know, the government officials, I'm not sure whether it was the governor or attorney general in Texas, offer wisdom in terms of, because it's not because of the number of guns available, but it's because of the cultural issues like abortion.
Oh, that blew my mind.
No, there's so many abortions.
I'm not even going to touch that because, you know, I almost wanted to ask them, okay, now, since you brought it up, God forbid that I should even utter these words, but do you mean the bad ones weren't removed from the gene pool? Is that what you mean to say? You know. Anyway, so did you like my topics?
I did. I noticed them. I did read one article which I thought was interesting because it's in terms of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
mm-hmm,
and his reflection on art and how specifically in terms of how do we
suss out the good that people do from the bad that they've done?
Yes.
Is that succinct yes. enough for you? You know, and that's also one reason why I said I'm not going to blame gun people wholly for this, because it's something in ourselves as human beings that keep us from letting go of things. You know, the things we want, and we justify the wanting of those things so many different ways. But when it comes to our perceptions of good or positivity or value, and by value I mean a quality that enhances life, not like values such as ethics or such, you know, how do we separate them from the people who have manifested this art, this value, this beauty, from the ugly things that they do?
And his article, which was in the Hollywood Reporter, I believe, in last month, where it's a personal, somewhat personal reflection on his relationship and his thoughts about specifically Bill Cosby, and how the society struggle with how do we respond to what we know now about Mr. Cosby in terms of his action, and how do we or can we separate the image he created and also the impact that he had? And in this article, he talks about how, you know, when he was growing up in 1965, he was a senior in high school, and that was in the midst of a lot of racial tensions in the United States. And he talks about being called the N-word by his high school basketball coach. And all of a sudden, in the fall of 1965, you have this on television, which a whole different thing than what we see now 50 years later. You know, mm-hmm. there's three major networks, but major network aired a TV drama starring a white man, Robert Culp, and mm-hmm. Bill Cosby.
That's right.
As I Spy. And interestingly enough, you know, one was an athlete and one mm-hmm. was
tennis pro,
and one was his coach.
Yes,
his coach, the athlete, wasn't Bill Cosby; mm-hmm. it was Robert Culp. So, mm-hmm. In one way, there was a role reversal of typical roles that played at that time for black people in the United States. So, Bill Cosby, who was also, I mean, the coach was his cover, but he was also a Rhodes Scholar who spoke multiple languages mm-hmm. and very sophisticated.
Erudite.
And here was, you know, this image of black people, of black man in the United States, which was different, which was inspiring. Mm-hmm. And he goes on to talk about his relationship with Bill Cosby, how Bill Cosby was a mentor when he moved to California to go to college, and he shared much with him and taught him much, and then we know what
was really transpiring.
Yeah. So how do we respond and try? He also talks about how difficult it is for him, and he mentioned I Spy specifically mm-hmm. in terms of watching it now mm-hmm. as opposed to, and I think many of us have this similar type of concerns, and not only about Bill Cosby, but other artists
or other people, such as Al Franken,
yeah.
You know, for those, and this is not the best example, but Bill Clinton.
Yes.
Not the best example. You know, some people might have really liked Mario Batali, you know, who is also, he's mm-hmm. a cook. Oh. And, you know, so if you've seen him on the cooking show, he does a lot of Italian cooking. He, too, has been accused of sexual assault. Luc Besson, who is a movie director who, one of my favorite movies by him was The Fifth Element,
yes.
You know. And so when you look at this, how do you separate the art? There have been academics recently who, some of them are photography professors, some of them are literary professors, and here their skeletons and bones are falling out of the closet. And so people are confused because they don't know whether to throw the bath and the baby out, keep the bath water, keep the baby, burn the tub, you know, what do you do?
And how do you separate it? Because it might be, say, okay, you separate the art from the artist, but if the art is a part of the artist, so can you really separate them? So, you know, it's a long history about in terms of cultural icons and cultural figures, writers, artists, and you know, that person is a fascist. You know, do we appreciate her writings, or do we separate who that person is from what they've done?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not
how easy, and why know. And where? And then does that mean that all human effort is tainted? Well, there's some people who say, yeah,
yes,
without hesitation. And we must continuously separate wheat and chaff, you know?
So how do you do that, or, mm-hmm. or do you make a separation in terms of, you know, on the macro level, in terms of looking of artists and their art, but also how do you separate the individual from what that individual has done, or can you?
You know, how do you continue to be inspired by work done, and it doesn't have to be, as I've mentioned, limited to artwork, but how do you continue to be inspired by work done by those who've perpetrated hurt, crime, you know, atrocity with the same hands?
How do you make those judgments? So it's somewhat of an open question. We have no answers, and so it's helpful to hear the insights of others. Give us a call, if you may. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And
join in the conversation.
And as you do that, let me remind you that coming up at 9 o'clock is the OMO Variety Hour. And at 10 is Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein and her weekly conversation about our place in the planet. At 11 is On the Ground Radio with special guests Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka. And those are some of the things that are coming up here on your KVOO community radio station. But first, it's you at 503-231-8187. How do you separate the art from the artist, and do you make the separation? Who are some of those people that you struggle with?
Have you given up Jell-O?
Have you given up Jell-O? For a number of reasons.
But, well, I wanted to make it just a little lighter.
But you, Dr. Huxtable, I mean.
I try to take the good from the bad, and I guess for me it's a matter of balancing human effort and viewing it through the eyes of my faith. And that gives me a way to look at the fact that pretty much as a human being, we're going to taint things. We're going to, you know. You can call it part of the... oh, I don't know, the heritage of original sin or whatever you want to call it. So I expect that things are going to be tainted. And so on a micro level, for example, there are teachers I've had that have turned out to be atrocious. There's things that family members have done that have turned out to be atrocious. And I keep trying to remember this is a human being, this is a flawed human being, yada yada. Part of my reason for being here with them is to love them and, I don't know, inspire them to reach for a more divine level. But that's me. And it doesn't always work.
It doesn't always work. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our first caller in a little bit. Ruby, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What are your thoughts? Thank you for calling in this morning.
Yeah, it's a great conversation. And as you're talking, I'm thinking about the different schools of thought when, someone does something criminal and we imprison them. And there's one school of thought that says, you know, you are tainted, you need to be punished, and you are no longer fit for society. And there's another school of thought that says you can be rehabbed, you know, you can be healed. And we don't judge a person based on their one of worst actions all the time. And so it just makes me think of that conflict of, you know, when someone does something that is harmful to other people, you know, what do we do with them, even if they haven't contributed in a very public way to the art world or the music world or the film world? So it's just an interesting way of thinking about it.
Well, thank you. So is there a way that you personally find to help you accommodate this cognitive dissonance of, I'm going to hold on to this person or their works despite what I know about them or their actions?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we know that it's, you know, that things like this, actions like this, violence or assault don't happen in a vacuum, right? We know that there are problems from trauma, from cultural illnesses. And so I think it demands that we understand the complexities that lead people to do things that they're doing and to be able to address them, have some kind of, you know, infrastructure to be able to address them and believe that they can take responsibility for their actions and, you know, heal to the point where they're no longer a danger to others. I don't know that we have that really built into our society. In some places we do, but, you know, we're very punitive. We tend to think about just kind of punishing and putting people away. And I think it takes more nuance and a deeper understanding to be able to say this person did something and they also did other things. And that doesn't mean that everything that they've done is bad or worthless.
Well, thank you, Ruby, for sharing your thoughts with us this morning as we continue to investigate and try to come up with a way in which to respond to these things in our lives.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for the conversation. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And I want to, in our conversation, I don't want us to lose the point or forget those who mm-hmm. are the survivors of violence. So I think oftentimes we focus on that person who did those evil acts and forget about the harm, the continuing harm that has been done by their actions, and so much focus. I think it's important to focus on seeking redemption and mm-hmm. and restoration and recovery of those who have something wrong within them. At the same time, we cannot forget those who have been victims and who are one struggling to find their voice and to be heard,
mm-hmm.
And to seek what can be done to help them, to empower them.
So one of the questions then I would throw out there to listeners is this. Does it continue to devalue victims if we celebrate the work done by the abuser or the perpetrator or the criminal. You know, for example, shows have been taken off television, but there are still some people who play music by artists that have perpetrated, or their artwork remains up, or their particular thesis or perspective in law or academia remains. Does our continuance to value this devalue the victims? And so think about how you would feel if that were you or somebody you care about, and then see if you can balance the scales, because I can't. I'm not going to pretend I can.
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And let's go to a next caller, Jen. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I really appreciate the way you present your show as a platform. And like the last callers brought out the context, that we could look at the context. Because it would seem to me what really helps me, some concepts that I have derived from my Buddhist practice about the fundamental darkness that is inherent in all of us. And then another one is the mutual possession of the 10 worlds. Like, we all have the capacity to rise up out of this fundamental darkness, but to see this as not just outside of us, and to recognize that we're living in a very dystopian type of a situation in our society at this moment, maybe even from the time of Shakespeare, where darkness has risen so far up to the top, that we can find some shred of good in the worst case scenario. And I don't know, it's pretty difficult, because I, like, even on KABU, I think you probably have the purified essence of what KABU's trying to be open and not just to be a couple of little cliquish people bashing the others. Like, there's the Bernie bots and the Hillary bashers and this sort of thing, but that we recognize the larger context of what we're all dealing with, and so that if we can kind of purify the essence of the way we think about things, what I appreciate is this idea in Buddhism is about there's not two lands, one good and one evil, but the safety and the security of the land is the same as the purity of the minds of the believers, so that when we have the opportunity to kind of strip it down, our ego and our judgments, and hash this out like you provide, it's really a rare opportunity for us to share perceptions. And so I just wanted to really thank you for carrying on in that tradition, not to just be, they have conversational narcissism where you're just waiting for someone to stop so you can put out your point, and so self-absorbed. It's not the way to really go forward, as you really provide a great way, great format. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the compliment. But you can't get out of here without telling us how you strike a balance a little bit more succinctly. Because, well, as you put it we do like conversation.
Yes, well, I just get myself also so frustrated and be thinking that that I'm all that with the way I try to proceed. But I know that, you know, I've got my weaknesses and my darker tendencies. Maybe it's kind of relative that my tendencies are a little bit of aggression doesn't seem like much on the wide scale. But then I am thinking in a way to savor some of the things that were provided by some of the, it's kind of hard, you know, to paint the kettle black. I think, you know, that, but you see the suffering that comes from us not working on trying to be true and being real. And the way you started this morning to say, what part of you is you? The virtual comfort that you have to be yourself is evident that your sincerity is here. It's about as far as I can take it. We're all works in progress, even these, like, creepy dark people on Killer Road. Their DNA doesn't sometimes even show them to be. There's so much aggressive hostility, like, out there, and people are having these insecurities, like Bush on the bench, because so many weird things happened to him that he rose up to be such a horrible perpetrator of so many horrendous things. And you can't really forgive that, but you could still look at it.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll love to chew the fat with you guys.
Okay. But thank you.
You're listening to KBOO More Talk Radio. This is More Talk Radio, okay? And our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we're seeking your wisdom about how do we separate or can we separate in terms of those who are, lack of a better term, artists from the art. Our baseline article, this was an article by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the Hollywood Reporter in April, in which he reflects on his relationship with Bill Cosby and the grief and the struggle he had necessity he had to separate and break that relationship and hurt it does. Also related, you know, as Jen was speaking, is that certainly none of us are 100% perfect all the time. But also,
all the time, I'm not sure I've ever been perfect.
Perfect,
okay? I don't care about everybody else. I'm going to admit it. Okay. I don't think I've ever been perfect, except maybe a perfect fool.
Oh. Mm. Can you be perfect? Ooh. Oh, that's a philosophical question.
Yeah.
But related to that, you know, it's really difficult. I mean, for me, I am haunted by the memory I have of couple of decades ago,
mm-hmm.
Of someone coming up to me and sharing a story of being threatened or assaulted by someone in authority,
mm-hmm.
And I'm haunted by what could I have done better in terms of when that was shared with me. And there's more I could have done, I think, than mm-hmm. I did. And wondering, I'm not sure where I'm going with that, but in terms of not only looking at those who were the perpetrator of violence,
uh-huh.
But those of us who too often are silent when we're told about that.
Well, you know, part of the challenge is the fact that we're not taught coherently, cogently, consistently how to be of assistance to people. And then we're not taught how to value a person over the things that we want to apprehend, grab, have, control, be a part of. So an example would be, and I'll use people who could both be considered heroes or vilified. I'll use police officers. So you're in a group and you're trying to do good and you're part of a contingency that maybe has done something really fantastic. And maybe you go to a different district. You know, you're in a whole different district now. And this district has a bad reputation for doing things not right. And you see that it's not right. And you have to deal with that cognitive dissonance of trying to value being part of this group, challenging it based on their own values, and being concerned about your own safety. So that's an extreme example, but it helps us maybe parse out and look at how we respond to the fact that for a lot of people, and I'm gonna go back to Bill Cosby, he was a cultural hero in that he helped people redefine public self and creative self, mm-hmm. in a time when for Black people, public self was always a bad thing. You always denigrated, and private self was dealing with internalized racism, yes. and cutting self down and becoming self-destructive. And then to find out that he's perpetrating all this stuff with cold calculation is disarming. But you still have some measure of skin in the game with him because you're in that same club. So let's go to our callers. Good morning, LJ.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. How about yourself?
Okay, very, very good. Thank you again for the conversation. Okay, so just a couple of things that I would like to bring up. First of all, finally, a big shout out to Ida B. Wells, who is finally being recognized for her anti-lynching work back at the turn of the century. It's been strangely silent about all of the work that Ida B. Wells did in this anti-lynching movement and the price that she had to pay. And now we're finally learning something about Ida B. Wells. Mm-hmm. And just one quick thing. Angela Davis wrote a book called Women, Race, and Class back in the 80s. And it's worth looking at because she outlines the history of black women's suffrage back at the turn of the century. Okay. That being said, see, we have a problem delineating Dr. Huxtable from Bill Cosby. Dr. Huxtable is a part that Bill Cosby plays on TV. Dr. Huxtable is not a real person, all right? It's just a part that he plays. He's given a script, and he's a fine actor, and he does a fine job, but Bill Cosby is not Dr. Huxtable. Bill Cosby is Bill Cosby, and we have a problem with the characters that we see on the TNV and in the movies, etc. And we think that those people that they play are them, and they're not.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, but here's the challenge, LJ. I'm not talking about Dr. Huxtable. I'm talking about the body of work that Bill mm-hmm. Cosby has done right. as a cultural and ethnic icon. That's right. a different thing entirely. Okay? And so we're not calling into question the difference between Bill Cosby and Dr. Huxtable. We're calling into question the confusion over how do you value that body of work that was done by a cultural and ethnic icon in a time when it was really needed, and how do you mesh that with a person's needs for safety and security and value. It's hard in some ways to define wholly because it had such a strong resonance within the Black community. Mm-hmm. And see, it would be different if we were talking about James Brown. Okay, and let me qualify that really quick. Say it loud, I'm Black and I'm proud. It was just as much of a cultural icon and an ethnic icon and a saving grace for American Blacks. But we all knew James had a checkered past. James mm-hmm. had a checkered present. And, mm-hmm. well, so also his future. He didn't come off trying to be squeaky clean. He did not market squeaky clean. He did not market acceptable squeaky clean, exceptional mm-hmm. squeaky clean, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what Bill Cosby did. And so mm-hmm. there's also a moral, you know, or ethical difference that we're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're talking about.
I like totally understand that. Bill Cosby is a successful actor, all right?
Well, is body, debatable, but yeah.
or he's marketed as a successful actor, right? And he gets well paid for what he does. But the actor Bill Cosby, the one who pretends, all right, and is given a script and pretends, is not Bill Cosby.
Right. Hey, right? Thank you.
Well, thank you. I think you're missing the point, and maybe this is one of those, you got to be part of the group to get it, because it's an inside, it's a cultural thing, which I'm sure you have an analog for, but you're not quite getting the point that I want. If we had more time, I would love to talk with you, but maybe that's my excuse blog.
certainly. We need to give other people a chance,
yeah,
to express their views, etc. But like from my point of view, Mr. Cosby was held in very, very high esteem by the Afro American community. He was an icon.
Hey.
And now his status as an icon has been diminished.
Okay.
Over his personal behaviors.
Okay.
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 We'll have a good day.
All right.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Hey, thank you. During that last conversation, I was just thinking about, because LJ mentioned Dr. Huxtable, but I think of Bill Cosby. I remember, depends on where you are. So either he's the guy with the Jell-O,
mm-hmm.
Who's the cartoon characters he created?
Fat Albert.
Hey, hey, hey. And later on in the 90s, he had Little Bill, was this little boy,
mm-hmm.
With his grandmother and
mm-hmm.
But all this in terms of cultural things, you know, he had that whole campaign about education. He funded black colleges and university.
He was a champion for HBCUs, mm-hmm. as was, I can't believe I forgot his name, another black comedian. It'll come to me later. And then people keep forgetting, you know, when we talk about somebody being entrenched in the community and in the culture, I don't know, we had a large collection of Bill Cosby comedy records.
Yeah.
And would listen to him. And was one of the few family-friendly black comedians that was prominent at the time, Bill Cosby.
I got one of my Bible lessons from listening to, what was it, Noah.
There you go. And, you know, and so that's what we're talking about. It's like when somebody builds up the community, but it turns out they've got, well, our idol has clay feet.
Yeah.
Mm. Let's go on to our next caller. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, you know, I have a whole different perspective of Bill Cosby. Besides the fact that he's reprobated, Bill Cosby lashed out at the black males.
Yes.
Yes.
And, mm-hmm. and, you know, denigrated black males. And so, personally, I don't have any high regards for him. But you guys sounded contradictory when I think I heard the female say her faith, talked about her faith. And if you know anything about the Bible, then there's no surprise about Bill Cosby or any other human being out here, because the Bible say we're all flawed. So, you know.
Hey, you are so right. I mean, that's why I kind of have to take it with a grain of salt, because, you know, all of us are broken.
You know, and which brings me to my other issue is that I'm assuming you're a Christian. I mean, I'm assuming that, because most black people that I've met are Christians or Baptists or whatever.
I hate to break your heart, Mike. Well, I am, but I have met quite a few who are not. And they range everything from Buddhist to pagan. So, you know, but I am.
Okay, that's good. So my whole thing is that I've heard you guys more times than not defend the Antichrist, and that's always perplexing to me when
Okay, so who is the Antichrist that we are defending? Which what? I got a big question mark over my head.
Well, you defend illegal immigration and the immigrants that.
Oh, Lord, read your Bible. You know what? In my devotional, I have a whole segment on welcoming the refugee. Would you like me to give it to you, brother?
See, wait a minute. You're getting sarcastic. Now, most of these
No, I am dead serious because I got it out and read it to make sure my attitude was right.
The people that I've talked to, they're Catholics, and they say, I'm not a Christian. So if you're promoting... I know you don't, but you see, you can't deal with the truth, though.
I'm listening to you. I am listening. I haven't told you to shut up, so I'm listening.
You support the Antichrist because they're anti-Christian. They don't believe in Jesus.
Wait a minute. How are immigrants Antichrist? You got to help me here.
They don't believe in Jesus. They don't believe in Christianity.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. Which immigrants are you talking about that don't believe? Are you telling me every single immigrant that comes in this country doesn't believe in Jesus? Is that what you're telling me?
Let me break it down.
No. This is a yes or no question, Mike. You're telling me.
I say illegal immigration. Most of the Mexicans that come in here, they're Catholics. Most of them.
Oh, Lord. So,
that's the Antichrist. That's what you...
Oh, Lord. You know, I don't even know how to say this, because I want you to know I respect you. The Bible says, welcome the stranger. That's what the Bible says.
The Bible also says God is a jealous God, and he don't want no other God before him. So,
I'm not holding any other God before me, but, you know... I'm not sure I don't know how to say this without sounding rude, but I don't know where you went off the tracks. But
even though we don't
agree, I enjoy talking to you, but lately you just talk bad about people. And so I wonder, are you separating out the systems that cause people to have to do illegal things that are not necessarily immoral things from what you define as bad or antichrist? Because coming here illegally for some people might be a desperate act of saving their life from some damage that our country did to their country. I mean, do you stop and think about that?
I stop and think about everything, but what I'm more
concerned about... So what do you think about that? The fact that some of the people who are immigrating here illegally, and I'll say that they're immigrating illegally. That act is illegal. They aren't. They are coming here because we, United States of America, have done something to their country to destroy their economy or their political system or destabilize their way of life. And so they're coming here to escape with their life. Now, what do you think our responsibility is to a person in that case?
Well, when these people come here and they start hijacking Black heritage, I have a problem with that.
That's another conversation. And okay. You may have a point there, but let's talk about that.
There.
You know, email us, and then let's talk about this. But right now, thank you for your call.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. Our number is 503-231-8187. The topic of our conversation this morning is the balance between an artist and the art. I'm going to quote the article by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar before we go to our next caller. I'm just wanting a couple of paragraphs, short paragraph. Mr. Abdul-Jabbar writes, I'm referring to Mr. Cosby, his fall from grace was America's fall from innocence. But was I that innocent? Were any of us? Because even though we find his action despicable, we have to recognize that most men and many women colluded to maintain a social order corrupted by gender disparity. That disparity made women afraid to speak out whenever they were harassed. Every joke ever told about female drivers or ditzy blondes or man-eating businesswomen weighed them down in the eyes of society and made them afraid to speak out. We made Cosby and Weinstein possible by creating the environment in which they could thrive. I'm confident that almost every male over the age of 20 can remember at least one incident from his past in which he made an inappropriate joke designed to embarrass a woman, an aggressive move meant to intimidate a woman, or a physical insistence disguised as seduction. If you don't think you have, you're probably lying to yourself and have learned nothing from the society-altering hashtag MeToo and Time's Up movement. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Nettie.
Nettie?
Yeah, this is Nettie. How you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm black. My family came up over here through slavery, and I've lived through the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and on up to today, thank God. And I'm concerned as to how so many people are, especially black, talking about Bill, what he did, right? I don't know a lot about the Me Too movement, but I got a gist of what popped off, and I got a gist of what happened with Bill Cosby, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of black people are running to the social media like it's God and expressing, like, confession. How are we going to, you know, deal with they sentencing Bill Cosby, but they ain't sentencing all that brought the, you know, the Emmett Till junk and all this other stuff that the, you know, the sins and crimes that was just done against black Americans. Then we take one black American as Bill Cosby and a bunch of white hoes, right, was up in there, knew the man was married, and turning tricks with him. That was the thing back in the 60s and 70s. The more money you had, the better hoe you got. And everybody wanted some dope, whether it was pills, coke, crack. It wasn't no crack then, or it might have been a form of it. Any type of drug, that's how the party jumped off. So for them ladies to come all these years later, I don't care if they black, white, I personally believe this is another attack on the black person.
You don't think that there are women that are being victimized by men? We all know that there's gold diggers. I'm talking about Bill Cosby. You don't think that some of these women were?
I think they lied on him. Hell, I think they all lied on him. I think they was all talking this shit. You dumb black bitch, hang the phone up. You stupid hoe talking about black people. Hang the phone up on that.
Well, you know, we try to have an intelligent conversation. And I was all right with Sister why she was, you know, saying, well, some of these women are gold diggers. Some of the women are. I am not naive.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that every woman wanted to trick with him is saying that he himself, except for the, I don't know, fornication, you know, adultery, he was pristine. He was clean, squeaky clean. You know, there's a story in the middle of that, okay? Mm-hmm. There might have been women for whom that was consensual. And there are women who have claimed something was abuse or rape or an attack, and it was a lie. Just as there have been men who said that being lied on, and they were lying. So, you know, the story is somewhere in between. We don't really know. And even though he's been committed and charged and committed, we don't know everything. But to say that every single one of those women was whoring themselves, I think is well, a little mean-spirited. And it definitely is ignorant because you weren't there. Boom. Let's go.
Let's go to Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. I tuned in kind of late, but it's gotten pretty interesting.
didn't it?
No. I want to for a while, I have been thinking about the contradictions of existence. So let me give you an example. We have a history of presidents in which we have many of them who have done some horrible things, even socially. We have some who were from slaveholding families. We have some that just degraded women. You name it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I ask how we arrive at having a President's Day without the conflict. And for me, I have come to believe that even if you disagree with the Woodrow Wilson, to deny learning about who he is ignorant on my behalf, because there is still this, where, how do you separate the balance of what was good and what was bad? And I think that's the conflict that we're living with Bill Cosby, in that do we destroy the good that he's done as a result of some of the dark things that he's accused of? You know, because
that's exactly the question, Bill. So how do you reconcile that? Because that is the question.
I think that we just have to arrive at this point that, as you have said, we are not perfect, but we currently exist in a society where the second we deem someone as bad, everything that they have done that is good, does it go out the window? I'll give you a prime example. I am fascinated with the writings of Mumia Abdul-Jamal, right? Despite being accused of what he's accused of, at some point I had to ask myself, if I allow the fact that this is a man who has been accused of killing a police officer to deny his voice, and is that irresponsible? And for me it is, because does he still have an honest perspective of the world? And the answer to that is yes. And I'm not supporting it. I'm saying at some point we have to separate the things that people are accused of or the things that we have believed them to be, and find the good in things, and not just discount the entire work of something or someone because of a dark moment in their lives. Because if that were the case, we'd have to take President's Day off of the calendar.
Well, I agree with you. We won't do it, though, because we know that, you know, Thomas Jefferson essentially was a pedophile and a rapist, and we still celebrate him, but that does taint it for me as a human being. But you bring up a point is, well, and you know, I'm going to tip my hat to Mike here, even though he's not on the line, is like, we're all sinners. We've all fallen. So how am I going to say, well, but I'm repentant. My deeds, you know, it's like, I'm not the one that's going to be judging my deeds.
So I'm going to take, I think, maybe a different perspective, because you raised precedent. So I think there's something different than, I don't know, some sin I did, some error I committed, as opposed to someone who is responsible for institutional evil.
I like that.
And so you know, I have problems with President's Day, and all because of what you issue, and Woodrow Wilson and his racism. So I think we need to talk about policies, and it's not just talking about, oh, that person is a bad person. It's their influence on them, what they did. And at the same time, when someone who's accused of sexual or physical assault or convicted of, then, you know, again, I think we can't ignore that in taking on the whole examination of who they are and what they've done. It's difficult and it's not easy, but it's something we cannot ignore. I guess that's my point.
You know, so I think, Bill, to hear what you're saying, I think a good way of looking at this, it demands that we start having another form of truth and reconciliation.
Yes, and I think that conversation, you know, because often as a black man, if I speak out against President's Day, it's somehow because I don't like white people. I mean, that's not true, because, well, we know that the history of the presidency. But at the same time, it's
am I supposed to put my blinders on in a conversation with someone who thinks that it's all good and it's all holy because they are the president, not because of the policies or the actions that they may have carried out against people? And I think that's the contradiction. And I think Bill Cosby, as in R. Kelly, as in many of these instances, it's going to continue to have this contradiction, because once we all have vested interest in ideas about what we think, it's hard for us to often back off of having been a fan of Bill Cosby and saying, on the other side, this is what he did, you know, or R. Kelly, this is what he did, this is what he's accused of. So I think that that contradiction is, once we can get over this contradiction, I think we'll be able to attack many things like discrimination and many things like, you know, so through voice, through the action of awareness, I think we'll arrive at a different point. But we have to be able to have honest conversations.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Bill.
Great final words.
We're about to go off the air. We commend to our listeners the article in Hollywood Reporter by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, where he talks about these issues.
And you can always reach us at moretalkradio@gmail.com for more conversation. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Here comes the Old Mole Variety Hour.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to invite you to the KBOO Recollected Open House on Thursday, May 31st from 7 to 10 p.m. here at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
Join us for a station open house and evening of on-air programming recollecting notable moments in KBOO Community Radio's early history.
Please join us to mingle with the program hosts, on-air guests, and KBOO community members.
Light snacks and drinks will be provided,
as well as the chance to view the evening's on-air programming while it happens.
Everyone is welcome. Again, that's KBOO Recollected Open House on Thursday, May 31st from 7 to 10 p.m.
at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
More information can be found at 50 Years of KBOO.